Okay, I'm in Russell Square with one of our ace guides. This is Molly. I've known Molly for many years. But the thing about Molly is she's not just fetching, she's also extremely bright and very warm and very friendly. So there you go, Molly. Now you're blushing. And tell us what you've just finished doing.
Well, thank you for that very flattering introduction, David. I've just been working at the British Museum for David and London Walks, and I've just been going through many of the galleries there, the Assyrian galleries, the Egyptian galleries, and the Greek, Roman, and the Egyptian funerary archaeology galleries. So that's what I did on my afternoon.
Well, another bit of introduction that I want to get in is I don't think any London Walks guide, and there's, 75 of us, has more range than Molly. Molly is an art historian, but she's also a Jack the Ripper expert. There she is. That almost is the entire spectrum. And she's got a special feather in her cap. We used to joke about this. Molly taught Donald Rumbelow, the world's leading expert on Jack the Ripper. Molly taught Donald the walk, and there's no other guide who can make that claim. But let's begin. Let's find out a little bit about where Molly got started. Tell us about your childhood, Molly, where you grew up, what you wanted to be when you were 7 years old. No one wants to be a tour guide when they're 7 years old. It's not even on the compass. So what about you? Where'd you start from?
Well, I had a really happy, contentful childhood. It was really, really good. And
What part of England?
I lived in Harrow.
In Harrow? You're a London girl then,
So
really.
London girl, yeah. Yes, I lived there. And my mum and dad never had very much money. My dad worked in a bank. Mum looked after us. And I grew up in a very, very happy atmosphere. Always lots of relatives and people coming to the house. It was lovely.
Did you collect things? What did you like doing when you were a kid? Did you have dolls? What did you do?
I did have dolls. I had a teddy bear and I had a couple of nice dolls. But we never had very much money, so I didn't have very many toys.
Uh-huh.
But I had a very good imagination and we had a very big garden. And I was always going digging things up in the garden.
Uh-huh.
So I really enjoyed that. And
school? Did you like school?
I didn't like school.
Oh,
I was very
like
unhappy there and didn't like it. I was hopeless at it.
They were all jealous. All the other little girls were jealous.
I don't think they were. I was probably jealous of them. But I loved sports. I was very good at that.
Oh, did you? Yeah, what sports did you play?
I was a good runner. I ran for the county at first.
Did you?
Yes.
I didn't know that, Molly.
I did, yes. I belong to an athlete.
And what sort of distance?
I did 100 yards, as they would call it, 150.
You were a
relay,
sprinter.
And I also ran with, goodness me, she was an Olympian. Her name was Mary Rand.
Uh-huh.
And I ran at White City with Mary Rand at one time.
Fantastic.
Yes. And I lost, of course, against her. But she was fantastic to me. And she was really very encouraging and very, very helpful and very kind. You know, so I always remember that.
Could you give her a run? Could you sort of keep up with her?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, well done. This is what I love about doing these. I find out things about people I've known for 30 years.
Yeah, I did. She was very nice. And
how about growing up? What did you want to be when you grew up?
I wasn't
did you
quite
think about
sure.
It?
I thought I might go into maybe journalism or maybe writing of some kind.
Uh-huh.
I always wanted to do things like that. I loved sort of fashion and things to do with that. I always wanted to go to art school, of course,
uh-huh.
But that was on the... because I was so dim at school. that was never going to happen. It did happen later on. But, so my parents were really worried, I think, because I really wasn't going anywhere fast. And... So Dad sent me to Pittman's, so later on, I learned to do shorthand typing.
So you can do shorthand?
Yes, I can do that. Not very well now, because I've forgotten all about it.
So what was your first job? Do you remember your first job?
My first job? I think I worked for an insurance company or something like that. And then over the years, I got sort of various secretarial work doing that.
And then how does guiding come into your life? How did that all come about?
I had some friends who were guides, and I shared a flat with a girl later on who was a guide. And one Easter, my friend said to me, you know, I'm working for this company and they're really short of people to take people out to Italy. Would you like to do it? I said, well, I've never done anything like that. So anyway, this company was a very good company and we did very well on this trip. And then they just gave us more jobs over the months and years to come. And then I worked for another company. I worked for Global. We did, you know, about... It was when you were doing a lot of countries in 2 weeks. And I did that for a little while. And I got fed up with sort of living out of a suitcase. I came back and then I did secretarial work for about 4 years. And then I got a bit fed up with that and decided that I would do something about it. So I did my city course. I got my City of London badge. And then I did the blue badge. And then after that, never looked back, really. Yeah. You know, I've been guiding ever since.
I mean, these terms, blue badge, these are terms that we guides use a lot. But I imagine there are a lot of people who don't know what a blue badge is or what the blue badge course entails. And it's really quite a rigorous course. Can you tell us a little bit about
it? Sure. It lasts for about 2 years. And it's very intense. You have to do a lot of training for it. Every single week and at weekends, you're out training or attending lectures. You have to do all your training not only in London, but also outside London as well. So that takes in areas such as Bath, Stonehenge, Oxford, Canterbury, Rochester, all the outside places, and really anywhere within a day's radius of London. So you're examined on all the out of towns, but also inside. So you have to sort of be examined in places like Westminster Abbey, the Tower of London, St. Paul's Cathedral, museums, British Museum, of course, comes in. Then the hard work, once you've actually got all your exams for it, then the hard work begins, because you have to start writing up all your tours, you know. So I've written up all of mine, really, in the past few, I suppose about 70 now I've written up all in all. And of course it was wonderful when I first started, because you were first starting, we started sort of together, and it was all walking tours were just such new territory. And in those days, you had the London Tourist Board and the Guild, and they were really very much against Blue Badge guides doing walking tours, because everything was done by coach at that time. And I was, I think, one of the first Blue Badges to do the walking tours. And then, of course, you started London Walks, and we started to get more Blue Badges involved, and it just sort of escalated. But it's all due to you, your company, London Walks, that the walking tours are as they are in London today, and in the world, really, because everybody's used London Walks as a benchmark.
Yeah.
And it's really, really escalated from there. And all the Blue Badge guides now want to work for London Walks, you know, because... It's such a great organization to do.
Oh, you're very kind, Molly. I'm tempted to say you're almost overqualified. There's the blue badge, which is extremely impressive. That's the biggest one of the bunch. And then the city badge, tell us a little bit about the city badge.
Well, the City of London badge, I did that first, actually. And it's just the city, there's two cities in London, City of Westminster and City of London. And for years, they've run a City of London course. And the city is a municipality. which basically means it's self-governing. And within the city, within the 1 square mile, it governs itself. So the city back... Oh, I've just stopped there for that ambulance. The city's unique, and it's got so many wonderful institutions in it and churches and history, because really it's the oldest part of London, and it dates back to the Roman period. The Romans settled down by the River Thames, and they called, when Emperor Claudius came to see Aloysius Placius, who was the governor at the time after they'd settled, he called it Londinium, which basically means the fort by the pool. And the Romans then turned it into one of the most productive cities this side of the Alps. And over the years, we found a lot of Roman London. So there's a lot of history there. And of course, you've got not only the start of the Romans, we found Roman remains, amphitheatres there. We found the Roman bars. We found all sorts of beautiful pavements and things. You've got the medieval history of the guilds and the development of trade. You've also got the Great Fire of London, the plague, and then the redevelopment of it after that, and really what it's become today. So that badge, just within, you know, the course that you do and the badge that you get, is really quite important as a good foundation for the blue badge.
Speaking of foundations, so that's these two professional qualifications.
Yes.
And then, and I was sort of almost joking when I said you one could say you're overqualified, because you're also an art historian. You did a degree, or is it a BA, or do you have an MA as well? I can't remember. Art history.
I really owe that all to Birkbeck College, and some of the fabulous tutors there.
Which we're sitting near, aren't we? It's not far.
Yes, we are indeed. Good old Birkbeck. And yes, they helped make what I am today, really. They're just wonderful, wonderful tutors there. And I got my first degree there. And then we had a great guy who worked at the V&A, and his name was Clive Wainwright. And he also taught the MA, or part of it, the teaching there at the V&A and the Royal College of Art. So he said, well, why don't you come and join us? You know, so I did eventually. And I got my MA with the Royal College of Art. So I got to the art school in the end.
did you have to write a thesis? Or did you have to write a paper?
Yes, I did.
On an artist or a work of art? Or
I wrote mine. On the first one, it was on Henry Layard, who was had a lot to do with the Assyrians and bringing a lot of the Assyrian objects back from the from Assyria to the museum. So I knew a lot about that, but I wrote on Layard as well, on his collection, because he was a great collector, and a lot of that's now been broken up. But that's what I did on my first one. And on the second one, it was really following the vein of collecting, because that's one of my great interests. And I wrote about the Victorian Revival, how in the 1950s, anything Victorian was really, apart from a few people that were interested in it, was nothing. You know, nobody wanted to know about Victorian objects anymore. It just became very, very unfashionable. And so I really wrote about the revival of that, and the V&A were involved in it, and various different collectors. And it all involved things like, you know, Portobello Road and the Camden Passage, and, you know, the people that were collecting those things. You could buy Pugin chairs for 12 and 6, you know, in Portobello Road, and all the different things that they found and how they found them. So that was the basis of it, really.
So that's actually, if you count, that's 4 professional qualifications. That's the City of London badge, that's the blue badge, that's the BA, that's the MA, and there's another one, and this is the one that no one much thinks about, but if you think about it, it's really the elephant by the poolside, and it is years of experience, years and years of experience.
Yeah.
Counts for a lot, doesn't it?
It does, and, you know, I owe that a lot to well, working for you, London Walks, I owe it to, you know, the colleagues I work with at the British Museum and other colleagues that I know, you know, the colleges that I've been to. So I've been involved with so many different wonderful, wonderful people, and they've just been an amazing inspiration to me all the way through. So I've been very lucky in that.
And the thing about London is you just go on learning, don't you? It's inexhaustible.
You never stop. You never, ever, ever stop, you know. And there's always something new to discover, and there's always some new project to work on, and I just love writing new things as well, because it's, you know, when I get the time, it's lovely to do that research on new things. So, yes, you never stop, and you always learn things, just like I did from you about the telegraph and the phones as we were coming over. You gave me that wonderful piece of information. Well, you never stop, really.
As a retreaded academic, I always used to say this, being a London Walks guide, is the world's best teaching job, because there's no committee meetings, there's no marking, and the students are all interested.
Well, absolutely. So, aren't we lucky?
And also, you know, to give them a big pat on the back, 99% of them are just wonderful. They're bright, they're switched on, they're friendly, they're fun. And we learn from them.
Well, we really, really do. And the wonderful thing is, that I think you hit the nail on the head, they're there because they want to be there. Yeah. And it's all reciprocated. You know, it's wonderful how they, you know, can bounce off one another. It's really good fun, you know. And we've had great fun in the museum over different things, you know, this afternoon. There's always lots of laughter,
right.
Which I suppose we shouldn't have, really, but we do.
Can you cite chapter and verse this afternoon?
Oh, dear, what were we laughing at? There's one thing. Oh, that was right. There was a monument. Somebody took a photograph of a monument, and I don't know. She had it on her phone, and we all gathered round the phone, and I was trying to show them what was actually on the monument. There was a detail there, and we couldn't get it. And then I sort of pressed a button, and I got all her other photographs on it, which had nothing to do with what we were looking at.
None of them compromising.
Well, they could have been. And that sort of sent us all off with the giggles, you know. Anyway, that's that sort of by-the-by. Stupid things like that.
Do you have a favorite exhibit in the BM? Has your reaction to the BM changed over the year? Is there a bit you like guiding the most?
I think it probably would be the Assyrians and anything in the Roman section, really, because of our background with guiding and the Roman history of London, and because I've probably done quite a lot on that in the past. And I've dug it up as well, because I worked as a volunteer for the Museum of London at one time, and I did a lot of archaeology then. I think probably the Assyrian and the Roman section. I think the sculptures of the Assyrians, because you just think, you know, that 800 years sort of BC, somebody was actually making this, and the realism in them is just so extraordinary. And I think some of the things also from, well, the Roman section, obviously, Mildenhall treasures, there's beautiful jewellery in there as well. You could just sit here and just say how many other things there were that you really, really loved, but there's... Yeah, I think if I had to boil it down, I think it would be the Assyrian sculptures.
I don't want to sit here. I want to go on the walk. Molly, if I do, can I have house seats?
You can, anytime. You know you can.
No, but we'll do that, and we'll make a little bit of a recording
absolutely
of
fabulous.
That.
Absolutely fabulous. That's great by me.
Well, let's sort of, you know, widen the accordion out a little bit, extend the range, because you also guide the National Gallery and the V&A, and these are your great, great passions, I think. Yeah. Is that right?
Because yes. The V&A, obviously, because I was there for 2 years and, you know, did the sort of joint MA with the college. and the V&A. So I knew it well, but I love the cast court there because I love plaster cast. I'd love to be able to do plaster cast making. I love it. And I've done a bit of it, but not properly. I love looking at that. Because all the famous artists in the 19th century, they all made plaster cast, people like Rodin and people like that. When they were presenting to the Academy, it was always a plaster cast, you know. But I just love those cast courts because the V&A was there for students originally, before the School of Design came along and before the College of Art. And the students in the college went there. And the whole idea of the thinking, you know, behind the V&A was to give inspiration for design for students. So it's lovely to be able to take students in there, and I take my own students in there, when I do my teaching. So yes.
Now let's do a handbrake turn. Let's go to Monday night and Tuesday night. It's Jack the Ripper, I want to say something about that because again, this is something. Well, I know, and your colleagues know, but the walkers don't know. Speaking of qualifications, there are depths within depths there, because you've also are an expert on, and you've created a walk on immigration in that part of London. So
Yes. You
don't just know the sort of tabloid sensational history of Jack the Ripper. You also, you know the social history. And, I imagine to some extent that will inform your Ripper walk, and your walkers are the richer for it, I think.
Well, it's lovely to combine that. You know, the walk isn't just about Jack. It's about the social conditions. It's, again, how the women were living as well, and really about the society at the time, because in the 19th century, after the pogroms, so many Jewish families had to leave, and they just, one of the places they settled was in the East End. And some of them were more fortunate than others, but some just came standing up with what they had. And so there was a very, very large Jewish culture there right up until the 1970s. So that's an interesting sort of aspect of it. There were also a lot of Irish people there as well, because after the potato famine in the 19th century, many of the Irish people came over. They were working on places like the Brunel Tunnel, any engineering that was going on, building. But when all that dried up, a lot of them were getting quite desperate. So there was a lot of poverty in the Irish community as well. In the 18th century, of course, because of the persecution by the French, in France, the French Protestant, a lot of them came here, and they were the Huguenots. So they built these amazing houses, these Huguenot houses, which are still there today. So on the Ripper Walk, we can obviously focusing on that, but it's a really nice sort of social aspect to bring in as well, which is I think people are interested in. And it's good for them to see the buildings, because so many of the Ripper sites are now gone. It's nice to actually show people, like the lodging houses. I mean, the lodging house now, one of them has now been taken over by the London School of Economics, and they're using it as student accommodation, but the exterior of it is still as you would have found it. I've got a photograph at home of it, of the women actually queuing outside it. And so a lot of that is still as it was. So it's lovely for people to not only learn about Jack and, the mystery and the myth of it all, but they can also learn about the, see the buildings and at least see some structural evidence, from that period as well. And there's still a synagogue there as well, which is great. So, there's a lot there on that. There's a lot of depth in that. And I think people enjoy it because of that other aspect of it as well.
Now, one other question on this
oh dear.
On this one-to-one, this kind of personal level. You've got this wonderful, soft, warm, friendly voice. But I know for a fact that you can etch glass at 400 yards.
Which I can.
And what's the secret? How do you do that? I'd like to be able to do that. Did you learn that actor trick of bringing the voice from the diaphragm or something like that? Yeah, you're nodding your head vigorously, so it's true. Caught out.
Yes, the voice projection is quite good.
Yeah. But again, it's true, isn't it? In the Blue Badge course, you learn things as well about acoustics and where to stand.
We do. We learn all of that. It's a wonderful training, you know, for anything you do, really, I suppose. You know, not only guiding, but you just learn so much from it, you know, and you learn how to, exactly as you said, project your voice. We have some great teachers on that course and, you know, great professionals. And I've learned it from a lot of the other people I work for, because London Walks have some wonderful, wonderful actors.
Yes.
I've got a lot of tips from them as well. Yeah. This is why I say it's so wonderful to do what we do, because... You know, you can learn so much from your friends and colleagues that you work with, and they're a wonderful bunch as well.
That's true.
Yeah,
they really
are.
The ex-teacher in me has come out. I'm feeling guilty. You've done two walks today, and I've kept you over.
At least I'm sitting down.
Detention time. So I'm going to let you go.
But it's been lovely.
Thanks very, very much, Molly.
It's my pleasure.
Been fun.
It's been lovely talking to you.
We'll do it some more, and I'll come back to
go
through the BM with you.
Okay, lovely.
Thanks much.
Lovely. Okay, David, thank you.